You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 21st of March. They blinked! Why Atlanta causes so many problems for the Jazz and what to look at in this loss. How big a deal is this loss for the Jazz with just 11 games left? And your NBA 5 looking around the league and a little bit of Adam Silver as well. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you're great. I know that one sucked, but I still hope you're great. Beautiful days in Utah, wherever you might be listening to the program. I certainly appreciate you tuning in. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, bringing you expertise, insight, look behind the curtains, and some geeky numbers about the Utah Jazz, who lost last night. What? We don't do that anymore. We're on the verge of being the first, only the second Jazz team to win 10 in a row twice. Lily, who was working on our broadcast last night, did all this work about that and had all these fun notes, and then we never got to use them. So, kind of a bummer in that regard. Today's show is brought to you by The Store and by my friends over at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. All right, we're right next to Woods Cross. All right, let's get to it. So, the Jazz have played 96 minutes of basketball against Atlanta, and offensively generally looked awful in both of them. So, it's the only sample size I have. I'm going to go beyond coincidence. I think there's something to it. And my thought on this is that we play a very unique style of basketball. We set about 15 more picks than anyone else. We run a bunch of dribble handoffs. We move the basketball. We do all these things differently than everyone else. And the team that is most like us is the Atlanta Hawks. And so the Atlanta Hawks practice every single day against the exact same stuff that we run. So there's no adjustment to them for them. Our first game against the Hawks, our offensive rating was a 91.5. It's our 61st best, or in a season where we've now played, I believe, 71 games. It is our 10th worst game. Last night, we had an offensive rating of 90.4, which is worse. And guess what? It's the 9th worst game we've had. So what do the Hawks do? One, they're quick and they're athletic and they know our stuff. That's the first thing. Second, they drop the big all the way back and Rudy just cannot get the rolls the same way. Torian Prince is this great athlete. He guarded Joe Ingles closer last night, more up on him than I've seen. I really felt like what we got last night was a playoff game plan. Mike Budenholzer and his staff prepare, you know, the way Quinn Snyder prepares. And so they were ready for our stuff because they practice against it. They understood exactly what they were trying to accomplish because they're so well prepared. Budenholzer is and Quinn are very similar. They're probably the elite guys in the league at preparing game plans. Two of the most intellectual guys out there. And they disrupted everything the Jazz did. And then there's an area where it's a make or miss league, right? The Jazz got 12 corner threes last night. Like, that's a great night. You get 12 corner threes, you're usually all right. And the Jazz went 2 for 12. They went 4 of 21 on above the break threes. There might be a little wear down going here. The Jazz are 7 of their last 40 on above the break threes. This is, you know, we're not the great, we're about 9th in the league in shooting. And all of a sudden I would say that I think that, you know, we're not the greatest shooting team in the league. I mean, Joe Ingles has been pretty darn good. But the defense is, you know, I it's interesting. There was a day where one of the reporters in town was kind of asking Quinn about, well, you know, how has your offense got it going also? And I was like, I don't really think it has. Like, This is the team that we envisioned when the year started that was going to be, if you're not very good offensively, but you're elite defensively, how much can you win? And last night was one where just a team that discombobulated our offense undid us. Furthermore, if you kind of take this back a little bit, all the way back to, you know, if I just take it to the All-Star break, actually, let's just go since the All-Star break, which is probably the right way to look at it rather than including that San Antonio in the Phoenix game beforehand, just because the All-Star break's a more natural break. And I'm trying to make sure I'm doing that correctly. The Jazz, since the All-Star break, on above the break threes, are only shooting 29.2%. On above the break threes, we're only shooting 29.2% since the All-Star break. Our corner three shooting, which is usually 41, is down to 37. Our mid-range shooting, which is usually 38.7, is down to 34.8. Otherwise, we've been about the same. But so we're not shooting it great right now. And Donovan's way off. So the offense is a bit of a struggle, and last night got us. The defense was great again. Last night was the 22nd best defensive night of the year for the Jazz. They had a defensive rating of 94.9. So, and frankly, if Joe Ingles makes 1-3, really, if he makes the wide-open kick out on the Rudy Gobert, which he makes about 45% of the time, and frankly, it's the exact same shot he got twice in Detroit in overtime to win us those games, and he missed this one. He just did. Like, it just happens. Nothing wrong with it. Not criticizing Joe. You're not going to make 100% of those shots. But that was, you know, you're going to make, he makes the highest rate of anyone in the league at 45%, and that one didn't go. But if that one goes and puts us up by one, we're talking about how the defense bailed the offense out again, which is what we did against Memphis, which is what we did against Sacramento, which is what we did in a bunch of the games. Against Houston and Portland, we couldn't score either. So we're still really offensively challenged. And that showed up last night. It is further accentuated right now on two levels. One is that Donovan's way off. And if we take a second and think about what we talk about with Donovan all the time, which is this unbelievable night in and night out performance by Donovan Mitchell, and then we talk about how rarely anyone's done it, right? So Donovan Mitchell scores 20 points a game as a rookie and wins over 43 games this year or something. He'll be the first rookie to do it since David Robinson. Why is that? Why? Because it's an unbelievable task to ask somebody. It's insane. Carmelo Anthony scored 20 points a game and won like 43 games, and he was just he was the best player in the nation at the time. Right? Coming out of college. Like, what Donovan has been doing all year long is truly, truly awesome. I think he's getting worn down by it. It's an incredible, incredible ask. Since the All-Star break, his above-the-break three-point shooting, 27.5%. He's not getting the corner three at all. He's taken 9 of them since the All-Star break because he's playing up top with the ball and off the bounce. And he's not, his off-the-bounce shot's not great. His finishing is still pretty impressive. 64% since the All-Star break. He's learned a little bit of how to score in the paint non-restricted. He was 4 of 6 last night. He's still amazing. But I think he's wearing down a little bit. Maybe it just hasn't gone. I think it's 2 of his last 17 from above the break threes. But teams are defending him. He's the front of the game plan. He's played 71 games. He played 35 last year. Like, it's a huge ask. When you run down the numbers and the data points that we keep giving you about how incredible Donovan is, we love these numbers. We use it to try to prove that Ben Simmons sucks, which is really stupid because it has nothing to do with whether Ben Simmons sucks or not, because Ben Simmons does not suck, and he's a generational talent, and he's unbelievable. But that's what we do with these numbers, right? 20 points a game as a rookie. Damian Lillard, 33 wins. Blake Griffin, 32 wins. Tyreek Evans, 25 wins. Three guys have done it in the last 20 years. Durant did it. Carmelo did it. LeBron did it. Elton Brand did it. Like, other than Tyreek, these are Hall of Famers. Six guys in 20 years. Right? Guys who've scored 30. Last rookie to do it with an effective field goal percentage. And it was a guard. It's like Jordan. I've got all these numbers in my notes. Most second half scoring of any rookie ever. Like, this is incredible. But there's a cost to it, which is we're asking him to carry everything, and it looks like it's a lot right now. The other thing, and I'm not trying to be critical, this is just facts, is that we can't score when Dante Exum's on the floor right now. And Dante shows these flashes, the coast-to-coast drive, the runner through the middle of the lane. At the same time, frankly, because he's played so little, he looks like he's playing his seventh game of his NBA career. But our offensive rating in three games now with Dante is an 84.8 when he's on the floor. Okay, that's, you know, I'm not trying to blame him, or again, I think this makes sense. We don't have Neto. We're letting Dante play some point guard. I don't know if he's a point guard. Dante individually looks, I think, really good. Like, all the flashes that made him the fifth pick of the draft, he's just really rusty. And then all the areas where, I mean, he has no pull-up game at all. He's going to try to develop it. He had one pull-up jumper last year. He had some in the summer league. There's progress there. He's no three-point shooting game, right? Okay, like, these are fine. He's developing. But as a collective group, for whatever reason, and some of it's Royce O'Neal, frankly, who's now shooting below, I think, 18% from three since the All-Star break. That group, and we miss an off-the-bench scorer. I'm being intentional there, not to say we miss Rodney Hood, because frankly, Rodney Hood never plays for Cleveland either, so I'm not sure that you can say you miss a guy that you don't know is going to be out there. But, you know, we just got, and so, and that might not be on Dante. So when Dante's bench group or whatever it is, that group's not scoring. Now, part of that is, like, Royce O'Neal, who was 30 of 76 pre-All-Star break from three for 40%, is four of his last 24. Okay? I mean, these things have all been going on. We're so incredible, they are so incredible, defensively, that we hide them every night. And we were that great again last night, and had Joe Ingles missed a three, which, frankly, he's done very, very rarely in a big shot all year, we're not talking about it. We'd be another day where we're like, defense is incredible. How'd they do this? Amazing. Wow, they overcame Dennis Schroeder's amazing night. And, you know, one shot is truly changing the way that we're talking about this, which is fine. But oh, those things all existed yesterday, too. So that's what happened last night. Like, basically, our... two things happened last night. We played a team that has our number. I mean, just is not bothered by the uniqueness of what we do. Two, our offense finally was bad enough that it caught our defense, and our defense was still incredible. Defensive rating last night was a 94.9. It was still incredible. You win 90% of your games when that's your defensive rating. We didn't. And so we've won 21 of 24. But it's a big loss. And it's a landscape-changing loss in the playoff picture, and I'll explain that coming up. Today's show is brought to you in part by The Store. 6200 South, 20th East. I had a friend with me yesterday. Took some ski runs together, and then she came down with me to the store. And as we wandered in, she's a foodie. She was like, "This is unbelievable! This is the greatest place I've ever been." We started on the right hand side. We went by the tap for the kombucha and the cold brew and the nitro and the different flavors. Then we got to the June pies and the cake de fleurs. Cake de fleurs are fabulous. They had those as samples in the back, and she buried those. And then there was my mudslide cookie, which is up there on the right. Mudslides every day. Mudslide. And we walked through all the great There was the Jacobs and Salt section. And, oh, my gosh, I'm just going to keep telling you about sugar. But there's a company, I don't remember what it's called. It starts with an M that does their, like, candy dispenser stuff. And I brought them, actually, to Quinn last night because Quinn loves chocolate. But their dark chocolate sea salt little balls might be better than the Mudslide cookies. And then we rolled through the cold brew section and all the produce it came back, and then the hot foods, and I got myself two sushi rolls for dinner last night, and we cruised back through and then got to the where the pico de gallo that they make right in the back is. Just the store's great. It's got such a local touch. And then I was with, actually, Lily Jackets was working our broadcast last night, and I said, oh, where'd she get, like, where'd you get this? I was like, the store. She's like, oh, I love that place. It is. It's the type of place, if you stop by and you go in for a minute, you'll feel the energy and the vibe that is the local aspect, the uniqueness of it. 6200 South, 20th East. Also, by the way, Cottonwood Ace is attached on the backside, and they've got the best Traeger's display that there is in Utah. So make sure you check that out. That's the store, 6200 South and 20th East. The loss to the Atlanta Hawks is bad. This entire time, while we've all been through euphoria, the one thing that I have continually been saying on this program is I don't like any of the models and the way they, I think they overestimate where the Jazz sit. And the reason I say this is because of the fact that the Jazz have a soft schedule, so the anticipation is the Jazz will win every single one of these games, and if the Jazz lose any of these games, because their schedule is soft and they don't play a bunch of really good teams, they don't have chances to make it up. Whereas the other teams pull off one or two upsets and steal a win or two, like the Clippers did against Denver, or the way New Orleans did against the Clippers, or the way New Orleans did against Milwaukee, they steal one or two. We didn't have that, right? When this whole thing started in February, when we started charting this coming out of the All-Star, we only played, because our schedule saw, four games that had a winning probability between 20 and 40, and no games were 0 to 20. So when we lose last night to Atlanta, we don't have a lot of chances to make that one back up. Does that make sense? This was the 19th time a team in this race, 3 through 10, played a team when they had an 80% win probability or more. It is the first time somebody lost. I'm not saying it's out. We're out of the playoffs, but we are still in a fight to get in. Now, Denver, luckily, is having problems, and the Clippers have lost four in a row. So, the Clippers didn't, those were all, three of those four were games where the Clippers had a chance to make it up. Tonight, they can steal one back against Milwaukee. But these things flip on the Clippers here pretty soon, by the way. Clippers finish Milwaukee, if the Clippers beat Milwaukee tonight, we should be concerned. And I'll get into that in the NBA 5 a little bit. But then the Clippers play Indiana, which is on the back end, I think, their trip. And that's another one to pick them. Then they play Toronto, where they have a high win probability, because I think Toronto plays the night before. They play Milwaukee at home, high win probability. Phoenix at home. They play Portland. Then they have the Pacers at home, high win probability. They have the Spurs at home. We're going to have to beat them in Salt Lake City. They have a high win probability against the Nuggets, high win probability against Pelicans, high win probability against the Lakers. Their stretch coming up here is not particularly difficult, and we have to get them. We really don't have a choice on that. If we don't get the Clippers on April 5th, this thing gets really tight. So we're not out of the weeds yet. I know everybody started talking seeding and who do we want to play. No. And last night's loss, if the Jazz want to make one up, the way the Jazz make one up is the Jazz have four games left in which our 20 to 40 win probabilities are unlikely. San Antonio, Golden State, at Minnesota, and at Portland on the final night. To make up for last night, you got to win two of those. If the Jazz win two of those left, the Jazz then have two games that are pick'ems left. Those two pick'em games left are between 40 and 60% win probabilities. That's the Lakers and the Warriors at home. You got to win one of those. Maybe both. We'll do the math here. We'll change that in a second. You have three games left that are should wins and two games left that are certain wins. You probably got to grab four out of five of those. And that gets you to 47. And then you're all right again. Those five, though, are Dallas in Dallas, Boston at home, Memphis at home, Lakers at home, Clippers at home. So you need four or five of those. You need to get two of the unlikelies and one of the 50-50s to get to 47. I mean, you can do it in different variations of this. You know, if you get five of those, it'd be pretty tough. But this is tough. 47 is going to be hard to get now. That was a wiggle room removing loss that makes it difficult, or just it's a loss. It's hard to go get back. You're going to have to do something exceptional to get it back. Is that exceptional that of the five games left the Jazz have against 60% win probability or more that they're going to go 100%? So that's winning in Dallas. That's beating Boston at home. That's beating Memphis at home. That's beating the Lakers at home. And that's beating the Clippers at home. Can you get all five of those? That's tough. If you do that, then you'll have to get two more. I still think you're going to want 47. Maybe the Clippers are going to come in at 45 and you're going to be able to sneak in at 46. And maybe Denver's going to come in at 45. Remember, you get into an individual tiebreaker with Denver at 46 with the Clippers slipping to 45 and you're out. That's a big one last night. There's no other way to look at it. It's not going to knock you out of the playoffs, but it's limited a lot of wiggle room. Winning and being the only team that's lost one, it's hard to come back and get it. And that's the impact of last night. Now, are other people going to, you know, part of it, we might be a little worn out, right? It's a lot of pressure every night. Are other people going to crack? Maybe that's what the Clippers are doing right now, having lost four in a row. New Orleans, we'll see. We'll talk about coming up NBA 5. I want to look at the Eastern Conference as well and match those ones up and see how it looks. We haven't looked at the East at all coming up in NBA 5, and I'll give you a better rundown of what's going on with all those as well. Well, everyone is talking about basketball drama this month, including me. Murdoch Chevy is giving you the best deals. The Murdochs must be mad with madness. Call it Murdoch Madness. You got to see, come and see Murdoch Chevy in Logan and Woods Cross for Murdoch Madness this month only. What does that mean? It means you get Sirius XM satellite radio, OnStar in every new vehicle. That's pretty good. Sirius XM and OnStar, you can listen to NBA games with SiriusXM. You get all that on top of Murdoch Madness perks. Car washes for life, safety inspections for life, 5-day exchange policy, famous price match guarantee. This is all over at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. The Murdoch family and Chevy have been together for 91 years and connected just as in the fabric of Utah and Chevy and America. Some great deals going on. The Equinox all-wheel drive LS for $22,990. And the Cruise LS for $14,990. I drove the Silverado truck and was blown away by the truck experience. Blown away. So make sure you check it out. Murdoch Chevy is the dealer you know and trust. Tyson was over at the Jazz game the other day. We have a good time with him. Remember, you're supposed to walk up to Tyson and give him a little pound on the arm. Big man, though. See if you got any guts. Find new roads at Murdoch Chevy. Murdoch Chevy is your no-regrets dealer. Okay, let's look at what's going on. Let's take a look at our what we got coming up. So Minnesota last night, if you missed it, probably a good idea not for me to assume that everybody knows exactly what happened. I'm guessing if you listen to this, you probably paid attention. So what was good, what was bad for us last night? Boston beat Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City fell apart late. I'm going to watch that game. I actually have the second half of all of these games for the plane today. I have so much work to do, and I'm going to end up watching basketball the whole time. Minnesota beat the Clippers, which is good for us if you're trying to make the playoffs and bad for us if you're worrying about seeding. So when the night started, you might have thought you wanted the Clippers to win, and when the night ended and we lost to Atlanta, thank goodness Minnesota won. New Orleans held off to beat Dallas last night, and then Houston beat Portland in a great game that I'll watch on the plane as well. So where does that leave things? From a pure standing standpoint, which, one way to look at the standings, by the way, is home wins minus road losses. And it's kind of a good way to tell where teams are going. Usually earlier in the season, it's better. We haven't done this in a while. But if you look at home wins versus road losses. Wait, I said that wrong. Road wins minus home losses. Road wins minus home losses. The Clippers are at 2. Denver's a 1. The Jazz are a 4. The Timberwolves are a 5. The Spurs are a 6. The Pelicans are a 6. And the Thunder are a 7. It's pretty solid. And the Blazers are a 7. It's actually something you do earlier in the year. Late in the year, this does. It sets up just right. That's where we sit. So that's in order of where we are. Denver's 11-23 on the road. So that's what's putting them in the most dire situation. Let's look at what's coming up. Minnesota, who just played so many games early, hasn't had to play a lot. And right now, Minnesota, with that win, they're at 31 losses. They're a half game ahead of us. What does Minnesota have loss-wise left? They play a back-to-back at Philadelphia that's an unlikely. They play Denver in Denver that's an unlikely. And they have that and one pick'em left. No, they don't even have a pick'em left. That's it. Oh, they do have a pick'em left. I somehow just missed it in my math notes. They play the Lakers on a back end of a back-to-back. They'll drop one other game in here because you just do. Maybe it's us. But I think Minnesota's not finishing with any more. So that's 35 losses. So Minnesota's at 48-47 to finish. Pretty clear in my book. That's a real, you know, so 48-47-48. The Spurs have done exactly what they need to do, which is win these home games. They have a big one against Washington tonight, and then they have us on the back end of a back-to-back. I think they've really got to get Washington tonight, because then they go at Milwaukee with a tough one, at Washington with a tough one. They play Houston a tough one. They play the Thunder in a tough one, and they play the Clippers. The 5 next games are all potential losses. Then they close pretty softly. So the Spurs that are sitting at 30 could very easily lose 35, 36 games. That gets them to 47. Thunder only play 3 more games or 4 more games all year that they could. Otherwise, they're heavily favored in everything. Their schedule's really pretty soft the rest of the way out. And they're sitting at 30 losses also, one more than us. Or one less than us, one better than us. But they play Miami, Portland, that's a tough one, but they're favored. Spurs, we just talked about. Nuggets, Pelicans, Warriors. And then they finish Rockets, Miami, Memphis, pretty soft. Denver's got the brutal stretch. They're in a lot of trouble. Portland is kind of locked into that 3 unless something goes wrong. And the Pelicans have the first game last night of 3 straight at home. And if fatigue doesn't get them and they get the next 2, they're probably all right. If they lose against Indiana or the Lakers in this 3-game stretch, they start to put them – they have a bunch of tough games. They have the Blazers and the Thunder games that they have to win coming up. And then the Clippers and Spurs at the end, the Pelicans suddenly can put themselves in trouble. So that's where we sit with that. We haven't talked the East at all. I just think it's interesting how much Milwaukee suddenly has not made progress. They have huge decisions to make. Miami's ahead of them. Philadelphia is sitting at 6th at 39-30. And Washington, Indiana are in a fierce battle for home court advantage if Cleveland's not careful. it hits them as well. So keep an eye on that one. Tonight, we got 8 games to talk about, and so we'll have that for you. I want to throw a piece of the Adam Silver conversation that we had in that will be on Thursday's edition of Locked On NBA for you. I talked to Adam Silver, and there were a bunch of really interesting things, but this was one of the more interesting aspects of where Adam Silver is looking to take the league.